course, you don't have to go far at any time to find examples of suffering in our world. Just to take the headlines of the Hull Daily Mail last week, give us some examples close to home. Family pays tribute to Hull FC legend David Topliss after his sudden death, aged 58. This has left us devastated. Neighbours distraught after house fire in North Hull leaves baby fighting for his life. Toddler robbed while in pram. Bag snatched from two-year-old's knee by hooded man in East Hull. Now, of course, we could all add many, probably more traumatic examples that we have known over the years, perhaps even in our own lives or those of others that we love. And of course, this says nothing of the violence and injustice of oppressive regimes, for example, in Zimbabwe, human rights abuses in, say, China, and so-called natural disasters, like the recent cyclone in Burma. Now, as we address a subject like suffering, we all come with our own experiences of living in this broken world. So can I say at the start, forgive me if in the inevitably brief time that we have together this morning, anything is expressed in a way that sounds unsympathetic or trite. Everyone's experience is significant to them, and it's not to be dismissed or taken lightly. Now, it's always sensitive because real suffering can never be a merely intellectual issue requiring an intellectual answer. Suffering involves a crying out from the depths of our being. Explanations, even if theoretically convincing, cannot leave us feeling, well, that's all right then, because the pain may still be there, and no one person can fully understand the difficulties or the struggles of another. The question is, how do we understand and begin to handle the question and the reality of suffering? Well, of course, this is a question that people have tried to find a framework for millennia. But let me begin by sketching in a few ways that have been developed over the years. For many millions of people in today's world, suffering is seen as some sort of payback or balance. Now, this idea is common in the Eastern mystical tradition of Hinduism, and it hit the headlines in this country in the late 90s when the then England football manager Glenn Hoddle espoused it in an interview. Every experience of suffering, so the idea goes, famine, disease, poverty, illness and so on, is understood as the operation of karma. That is the principle by which all actions of the past are balanced out by events in the present. So, the death of a baby in a Hindu family is seen as the reaping in the present of evil actions in the past by family members in this life or a previous reincarnated existence. Now, this is certainly a way of looking at life which gives a clear explanation of suffering, but it's not one which offers much comfort. Another long-standing view, also coming from the East, is that of suffering as an illusion. Many Buddhist views of the world argue that suffering is the result of wanting things, the desire for a better life when you're ill, the longing for the affection of a now dead relative. If such desires can be removed, then such feelings will leave us. Now, this is a sophisticated theory in many ways, but is it really possible to live life with that sort of framework? Can we really expect to live life in this world seeing suffering as a mere illusion? Well, another view of suffering is found in Islam, and that is the idea of suffering being determined. All events in life and history are absolutely determined by the unmoved mover, Allah. Humans have no right to question, merely the responsibility to submit to Allah. Now, again, this is a coherent explanation of suffering, but one which many find cold and unsympathetic. Another view of suffering, perhaps closer to home for many in our country, is suffering as natural. This is the non-religious explanation. For the atheist, suffering is the natural, unhappy consequence of living in a random world without design or purpose. Richard Dawkins puts it like this with his characteristic, almost religious confidence. He says, in a universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt. Other people are going to get lucky. And we won't find rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice. Now, this idea may appeal to some, though it's rather scary, but it does very little to help the universal need to ask the question why when confronting suffering. Can we really live with that view of total purposelessness in life? It might be possible intellectually, especially if you haven't really encountered suffering. But is it really workable in life? Well, for the rest of what I want to say this morning, I want us to turn to the Bible's view of suffering. And what we find gives us, I would argue, the least incoherent explanation of suffering in our world. It's an explanation that rings true to real life. It doesn't deny reality. And as we'll see, it gives real people real help in facing it. Well, firstly then, in the Bible's analysis, suffering is real. A little earlier, we read some words from the Old Testament. They're words of a Hebrew poet in Psalm 22. Let me read the opening lines again. My God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I find no rest. Now, I guess if I was a Buddhist, such words would show that I had a long way to go to find true enlightenment. If I was a Muslim, it would pretty much seem like blasphemy. If I was an atheist, well, it would of course be meaningless. But actually, these honest words of a suffering man are spoken by a person of faith. A faith in the true and living God. In fact, they are words spoken by the same author who wrote, "The Lord's my shepherd, I'll not want." The 23rd and indeed the next psalm in the collection of psalms that we have in the Bible. So this is a reminder that the Bible endorses our right to question God, to be honest before God, to say it as it is, to pour out our hearts to him. This is the real world. Suffering is no illusion. And God invites us to approach him with our doubts and our fears, with our frustrations and our pains. Now the cry, "How long, O Lord," is a common one in the Bible. And we're going to listen now to a song by a contemporary songwriter, Stuart Townend, which picks up this honest and yet faithful cry of the heart in our broken world. And it's going to be sung for us by Lester Bartlett and Rachel Griffiths. if you want to see the words that are actually reproduced on the back of the hymn sheet, which you can take away, the notice sheet there. So suffering is real, and God wants us to honestly express the way that it affects us. But also, we see that the Bible has pointers as to why there is suffering in the world. There was once a competition in a national newspaper. Readers were asked to write on the theme, "What is wrong with the world?" Now, from thousands of entries, the winner was a man whose letter was also the briefest. It went like this: "Dear Sir, I am yours faithfully." See, when we look at the world, we have to recognise that human beings are the cause of a great deal of suffering. Without outlining the exact details, the poet behind Psalm 22 puts part of his suffering down to the negative power of the human will. In the blunt language of an oppressed person, he sees his opponents like animals, and he writes, "Many bulls encompass me, strong bulls of Bashan surround me. They open wide their mouths at me like a ravening and roaring lion. I am poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. For dogs encompass me, a company of evildoers encircles me. They have pierced my hands and feet. I can count all my bones. They stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them, and my clothing they cast lots." That traumatized toddler in East Hull we mentioned at the start had the bag stolen by a hooded man. More seriously, rulers cause famines by refusing to share food. Wars are caused by leaders, which, or at least they're called by leaders, which take the lives of thousands. Gangs terrorize housing estates. Environmental damage is caused by human selfishness and decadence. In all these things and more, human beings, well, frankly, we are to blame. We cause so much suffering in our world. Now, it's true that we personally may not be to blame for all these problems. But if we're honest, even the best of us would be very foolish if we denied that at times we have been the cause of pain to others. In our selfishness, in the home, at work, and in our refusal to help someone in need. We often say, how can a good God allow suffering? Well, perhaps we should ask ourselves more often, why have we human beings caused so many problems? How can we allow so much suffering? Well, the way that the Bible explains the reality of our world is that God, in his love, formed the world and made human beings as the high point of it. Throughout the account of God making the world in the Bible's first book, we read the refrain, "And it was good." And it was good. There was perfection in harmony. But we also learn that we human beings decided that we knew better than God, and we turned away from him. And this has resulted in a serious rift between us and our Maker. God has allowed human beings the freedom to choose or to reject his love. How else could it be love? But tragically, en masse, we have rejected God, preferring our own way through life, marginalizing him. And this attitude to God has meant a once perfect world has been spoiled. A fault line now runs through human experience, which affects everything to some measure. Our health, personal and corporate relationships, as well as the physical world with earthquakes, cyclones, floods and the like. And yet someone may well ask, well, that may explain suffering in general, but what about my suffering? Well, Jesus shows in his teaching, for example, in an incident with a man who was born blind, who was brought to Jesus, that though what we do has consequences, suffering is not necessarily because I have done something specifically to deserve it. You see, the fallout of human rejection of God in our world is not evenly distributed in simple cause and effect. There's a mystery to suffering that we can't explain at this stage of history. That's a lesson that the book of Job in the Bible makes clear. Suffering then, in general terms, results from us humans turning away from the God who has made us. But the Bible also shows us that suffering can be turned to good. next Sunday morning, Sheena and the family and myself are planning to be in York Minster to see the ordination, that's the commissioning for church ministry, of an old friend of ours. Nick was our parish assistant for 2 years when we were in Hull. After 3 years at Theological College, Nick is going to work as an assistant minister in Middlesbrough. Now, Nick is married to Lucy. He's a Cambridge graduate. He's a former worker in the financial world of the City of London. He's also a rugby fanatic. But back in the early 90s, when he was 16, Nick was playing rugby himself, and he sustained a neck injury that means he's now a paraplegic who uses a wheelchair. Now, Nick's a remarkable man. And the way he tells his story is that initially, as you would expect, he was devastated and very angry at God, though he wasn't sure whether he existed. Nick can now say that good has come from him breaking his neck, because he realises that it is through his experience that God got through to him. Now, whilst of course he would love to run and walk, he realises that there's a purpose in his suffering. He's a man with remarkable gifts. There's something about him that people just want to pour out their heart to him. They see a man with empathy. Now, most of us find it extraordinary that such an attitude could be expressed by someone. We might even react angrily to that sort of sentiment because we have found suffering to be almost completely negative. And I don't wish to in any way play down the reality of such an experience. But Nick illustrates that God in his grace can take suffering and use it positively. You see, whilst the Bible does not encourage us to view God in the rather cold and fatalistic way of Islam, we are to gain encouragement from the fact that he is in ultimate control. Nothing takes God by surprise. And so he can turn that which is seemingly bad and turn it to something good. The early Christian leader, the Apostle Paul, can say in his letter to the Romans these words: "We rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character, and character produces hope." Professor Sir Norman Anderson was a highly distinguished academic lawyer. He was also a well-known Christian who would sometimes be heard on the radio. He and his wife Pat had the sadness of seeing all three of their children die as adults. In his autobiography, Sir Norman speaks about the death from cancer of their son Hugh, aged 21. He writes this: "People used to continually ask us why a young man of such promise and with such a zest for life should be allowed to die so young. To this, the only reply we both feel is that we do not and cannot know." The vital question to ask God in such cases is not "why do you allow this?" but "what do you want to teach me through this?" In a broken and mixed up world, suffering is real. We can trace its ultimate causes to our mutiny against God. And yet, in God's hands, suffering can be transformed into something purposeful. Now, considering this dimension of suffering brings us to our fourth and final point, which I believe as a Christian to be the most important as we consider this subject of suffering. And that is that suffering must be seen in the light of Jesus. We're going to listen now to a short sketch which owes its origin to something that author C.S. Lewis, made famous recently by the Narnia films, once wrote. It's called The Long Silence. At the end of time, billions of people were scattered on a great plain before God's throne. Some of the groups near the front talked heatedly and with belligerence. A middle-aged woman shouted,
"How can God judge us? How can he know our suffering?"
She jerked back a sleeve to reveal a tattooed number from a Nazi concentration camp.
"We endure terror, beating, torture, death."
In another group, a child opened his shirt.
"What about this?"
he demanded as he showed old scars and fresh bruises.
"Beaten for no reason but being a child. Hurt by the hands that should have cared for only death, not freedom."
far out across the plain were hundreds of such groups. Each had a complaint against God for the evil and suffering that he permitted in his world. How lucky God was to live in heaven, where all was sweetness and light, where there was no weeping, no fear, no hunger, no hatred. Indeed, what did God know about what humanity had been forced to endure in this world? In the centre of the plain they consulted. Each group sent out a leader, chosen because they had suffered the most. There was a Jewish woman, an abused child, a man with AIDS, and someone from a Soviet concentration camp. At last they were ready to present their case. It was rather simple. Before God would be qualified to be their judge, he must endure what they had endured. Their decision was that God
should be sentenced to live on earth as a human being.
But because he was God, they set certain safeguards to be sure that he could not use his divine powers to help himself.
Let him be born as a Jew. Let him be so just but so radical that he brings down upon him the hate and condemnation of every politician and religious group.
Let him try to describe what no one has ever seen, tasted, heard, or smelt. Let him try to describe God to people.
Let him be betrayed by his foolish friends. Let him be charged falsely, tried before a prejudiced jury and convicted by a cowardly judge. Let him see what it is to be terribly alone and completely abandoned by every living thing.
Let him be tortured and let him die. Let him die in the most humiliating death possible.
When the last had finished pronouncing sentence, there was a long silence. No one uttered another word. No one moved. For suddenly all knew. God had already served his sentence. When considering the subject of suffering, we can look at various views and theories. We can examine the ideas that people have used to wrestle with the challenges of the subject. But the wonderful thing about the true and living God that the Bible witnesses to is that in Jesus, God has not just left us alone in the brokenness of this world, which we have caused. No, God has come himself in the person of his Son to experience life in the raw, including an excruciating death. I wonder if you recognise the close connection between the two Bible readings we had this morning. The circumstance of the anguished poet in Psalm 22, 1,000 years later, become the circumstances and cry of Jesus himself as he dies on the cross that first Easter. He is subjected to ridicule and mockery. His garments are taken by others. The poet says metaphorically, "They have pierced my hands and feet." Jesus experienced real nails driven through his hands and his feet. As he hung on the cross, dying in excruciating agony, Jesus looked for words which could convey his feelings. And he chose what were even to him those ancient lines from Psalm 22. This is how Mark records it in his Gospel. "And when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, 'Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani,' which means, 'My God, why have you forsaken me?'" Now Jesus chose those words, it seems, not because he's full of doubts, but because he wants to identify with the suffering poet and all who cry out, "Why?" to God. Here is Jesus, God the eternal Son, who has become the Son of God on earth, entering into our pain and our misery. And this means that God knows just what it's like to experience what we experience. God doesn't just look on from a distance. He knows just what it's like to suffer physical pain, rejection, disability, grief, and the darkness of depression and sadness. The true and living God is not the unmoved mover of some religious traditions. He is deeply moved And he is able to sympathize with us because he has experienced pain firsthand. The First World War poet Edward Shillitoe put it well in the last stanza of his poem, Jesus of the Scars. The other gods were strong, but you were weak. They rode, you did stumble to a throne. But to our wounds, only God's wounds can speak. And no God has wounds but you alone. You see, God in Jesus has entered into our sufferings, and so he shares them and he understands them. But his wounds speak to something even more important than just our wounds. When Jesus was dying on the cross and called out, my God, why have you forsaken me? He was in a real sense being forsaken by God. He was taking in himself the consequences of our rejection of God, a just sentence that we all deserve. We used these words from the Apostle Peter's letter earlier in our service. Jesus himself bore our sins in his body on the cross, so that we might die to sin and live for righteousness. By his wounds we have been healed. Jesus was standing in for us, bearing our sins, so that those who trust in him need not. So not only can we know God's empathy in our weakness, we can know forgiveness, and therefore receive a friendship with him that will strengthen us as we live in this life with all its challenges and all its sufferings. And what's more, what happened to Jesus after he died gives enormous help and hope too. I mentioned Professor Sir Norman Anderson earlier. A few days after his 21-year-old's death, he gave the thought for the day on Radio 4. He explained why he was convinced that God raised Jesus from the dead. And then he continued, "Of this I am prepared to stake my life. In this faith my son died, after saying I'm drawing nearer my Lord. I am convinced that he was not mistaken." You see, Jesus' death and resurrection points the reality that this world will not always be broken like it is now. Jesus was raised with a physical transformed body, and that was a sign that he will return, and that all things will be transformed, and all suffering will be removed. All questions will be answered. All that is wrong will be seen as wrong, and all that is right will be proved right. As the last book of the Bible puts it, God will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning, no more crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. If we recognize our part in turning away from God and accept God's offer through Jesus of forgiveness and life with him, well, that is what we can look forward to. Well, surely, suffering is deeply personal. It is something that is a challenging issue to address. Many explanations have been given, from it being an illusion to it being meaningless. The God and Father of Jesus Christ shows us, however, that suffering is real, and it can be shared with him. It is ultimately in our world because of humans marginalizing God, but God in his love can turn suffering to a more positive course. And he has done this himself supremely in Jesus and his suffering and death. And what he has done in Jesus can give great hope because of his resurrection. Dr. John Dixon is a young Australian Christian writer who lost his father in a plane crash when he was only 10 years old. Let me close with some words from his recent book on suffering. "I don't think I have answers to all my intellectual questions about suffering and pain. I guess I could write another book on all the stuff I don't know about suffering. But what I learnt as I was wondering what God understood of my loss has changed my perspective forever. In the great work of art we call the universe, I cannot always follow the hand of the artist. Some of his work just eludes me. But what the biblical narrative tells me, and in particular the account of Christ's passion, is that while I may not be able to trace the artist's hand at all times, I can always trust his motives. The God who is in control of all things, who acts behind the scenes in all things, is also the God who willingly suffers. He is the one I can shout at, cry with, and find comfort in. His heart, if not all his ways, is clear to me, because on the cross, he wore it on his sleeve for all to see. And this God calls us to come to him, and to find in him a friendship, a purpose, and a hope that is what we all need in a broken world. Let's pray.